This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
Hello there, everyone, and welcome to episode 43 of From a Certain Point of View podcast. I am Josh.
I'm Adam.
And we are just so excited to once again be bringing you Star Wars news, reviews, and points of view today. And we got a lot going on in the show today, and also just a lot going on in the world of DC as well, which we'll probably touch on.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that.
So what have you been watching and playing this week, Adam?
Well, I'm just going to kick off the DC talk right now. I watched a documentary on Hulu this week called Batman and Bill. And that was an incredible documentary. It's basically about Bob Kane, who was credited as the creator of Batman for many years, pretty much from since his inception all the way up through like 2014 or 15, whenever Batman v Superman came out. He was the sole creator, listed as the sole creator of Batman. However, he worked with a guy named Bill Finger, who did a lot of the work, like maybe most of the work, in between ghost writing and ghost illustrating and ghost, drawing and all this other stuff. And never actually got any of the credit up until the one guy who wrote a book about it, and I'm not going to remember his name. And he's part of this documentary too, but he ends up finding a descendant of Bill Finger, and then they get into legal battles with DC and all that stuff, and then eventually Bill Finger is given credit. So it's a really, really cool documentary, and
yeah,
sounds interesting. Yeah, and today you mentioned DC fandom, so I've been watching a little bit of that today. And Wonder Woman trailer was awesome. I don't know if you saw the new trailer, but it was pretty sweet.
I didn't
see
that yet.
Yep.
I can't wait. I got to check it out. I'm really excited about that.
It was a very good trailer for Wonder Woman. And then Gotham Knights, the new video game from Warner Brothers Montreal, I think, which is the next entry in the Gotham and the Arkham Knights series. So I'm a big, big, big fan of that video game series. I can't wait to check that out. Yeah. And then, waiting around for some other trailers today.
Yeah. Well, we were having a chat in the car last night. Adam and I went to see The Empire Strikes Back in a movie theater. Once again, which was glorious, but, we were talking about the Snyder Cut, and, Adam, I've told you in the past that I wasn't a big fan of the Whedon cut, I guess we'll call it.
Right.
I wasn't a fan of the theatrical release of Justice League. I know you enjoyed it more than I did.
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
I felt like there was a lot that was cut, and some of it just felt like cheesy and stuff like that.
I will say that the tone was very off, very uneven. Yeah. So, I know that that's where that comes from.
You could kind of tell that there were two directors that had worked on this film, basically.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm really excited to see anything from the Snyder Cut, and I'm looking forward to seeing his vision and hopefully, with the trailer today, getting a little bit of that. So I'm excited about that. Of course, I've also watched The Empire Strikes Back, like I just mentioned with you last night, which was, what were your thoughts on going back into the movie theater and once again and being able to see?
It was awesome just to be back in a theater. But then aside from that, seeing it, the only time I've ever seen it on the big screen before this was when you and I saw it last summer in IMAX.
Right.
It was at the Science Center or, one of the.
Yeah, it was like the giant screen or whatever it was called. I forget. It was kind of
I forget what they call it, but it's the one that like kind of goes around in the curved screen that goes above your head and all that other stuff. So, but this was the first time I've actually seen it on a theater screen in an actual theater. So it was pretty cool. And I was kind of, I had a lot of fun watching it this time just because we had done the Thank the Maker so recently. Right. And so seeing some of those things that I've learned through researching for all that was a lot of fun. I saw a few little things on the big screen that I'd never picked out watching it on my TV screen.
What did you notice?
Well, for one thing, the main thing, I leaned over to you at one point, and you know, during the I Am Your Father scene, they're, you know, they're in the wind tunnel, and they have, I'm sure they have like fans blowing up on them for the air, and you can see Vader's helmet just kind of shake with the wind. It just looks a little flimsy, which is something I had never seen. You're right. I had never seen that before last night. So it was kind of cool. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I was just excited to eat an entire bag of Reese's Pieces and a large Coke, feeling no shame about it whatsoever. Yeah, it was just great back in the theater. Seeing a movie on the big screen, and we got some advanced tickets for Tenet because Cinemark. Let me say, Cinemark is awesome. Movie Club,
love Cinemark.
If you have a Cinemark near you, Movie Club is like, it's like $8.99 a month or something like that, and it's cheap. Extremely worth it. You know, you get a free movie ticket every month. You get discounts, 20% off concessions. And what they're doing right now with these throwback movies, these old school movies, is, you know, you're able to get a couple free movies if you're a member. And I think in Tenet, you get an early look at Tenet before anybody else gets to see it. So we're going to go member first and check that out. So it's just very exciting to be back.
I'm glad. I'm glad they're open again. I was very happy to get out and see a movie. So
definitely. Well, I have one more thing
I wanted to mention real quick. And one of the other things that I love movie series is James Bond. And I watched another Hulu documentary called Becoming Bond. This one about George Lazenby, who succeeded Sean Connery after his initial run was done. He had retired from the role, and so they had to find someone else. George Lazenby was a car salesman turned male model, who kind of bamboozled his way into the role of James Bond. He had never acted in anything aside from like commercials before this, but ended up getting into a room with Albert Broccoli, you know, the producers and all that stuff, and sold them on him being an actor when he was not an actor. And kind of his story about being Bond, and then he only did one. He was the only one, and he's also Australian. He's the only, he's the shortest tenured Bond at one movie, and he's the only Bond that has never, that was not born in Europe, you know? Hmm. So, really interesting story. And then after that, like I said, he only did one. He just left the role. They were ready to offer him millions because he actually did very well, and the movie was well received. But he walked away from it. He walked away from huge contracts and all this other stuff. And, you know, he talked about why he did that, you know, walking away from that fame. And then he talked about, you know, being blacklisted after that because he left that role. Mm-hmm. And he was never really able to get, you know, a good acting gig after that. You know, but he said he went into real estate. He just did things that he wanted to do. And, you know, he did that. So he kind of moved on from it and he was okay with it. And it's a really good story. As far as documentaries go, it's kind of racy. There's a lot of language. There's some other stuff in it, so don't watch it with kids.
Sure.
But it's a really interesting story. And, you know, I was always interested in that story, being a big James Bond fan. To see that documentary kind of brought it to life a little bit, obviously. But it was a very good documentary.
Yeah, and speaking of Bond, I'm looking forward to No Time to Die whenever that, I think is it supposed to come out in November, maybe?
November, yep.
Yeah. Before we go any further in the show today, I just want to say that if I'm having some technical difficulties with my new mic, just some crackling and stuff like that. So I apologize. Just got to work those issues out, but we're going to push through today. And we also are going to discuss, we're going to go through our poll results from this week. And the question, of course, was related to Return of the Jedi, because that was our last Thank the Maker episode that we did last week. And the question is about Ewoks. So I was really curious to see what people overall think about Ewoks, because, you know, I know there's a lot of fans out there, especially fans who saw the movie when it was released, who weren't very happy with Ewoks being in there.
Right.
But our poll results actually go against
that. I was surprised at the results here.
So the question was, what are your thoughts on Ewoks? And we had, I love them, they don't bother me, or I despise them. And we only had 2% of people that despise Ewoks. 38% said they don't bother me, and 60% love them. So what did you go with in this pool? And
I always loved them. I've always loved Ewoks. Yeah. I've never had a problem with Ewoks. I love Ewoks. And I've always heard, I was actually surprised, like when I was a teenager and started growing up and started getting involved in things like the internet and reaching out and talking to other people, that so many people didn't like Ewoks. I thought Ewoks were like a staple of Star Wars, you know, so I was surprised that people didn't like them. And then you start hearing so much, you know, so many people didn't like them. So I figured that I was in the minority, but our poll kind of showed different. I was surprised.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I went with they don't bother me because, you know, I'm kind of somewhere. They don't bother me. What I meant by that was they don't bother me as much as maybe they bother some other fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And I like them well enough. I feel like some of the scenes on Endor with the Ewoks and everything, they kind of drag it out a little bit, maybe too much. Like it goes on a little bit too long.
Yeah, I can see that. Sure.
It kind of takes away from the pace of the final installment there. But, but yeah, I mean, I don't mind the Ewoks, and I'm glad to see that most people either like them or love them. So that was cool.
But yeah, so cat in chat, or Vader's girl says they're baby Wookiees.
Baby Wookiees, yeah. I mean, because
baby Wookiee might look like that.
Originally, we were supposed to go to the Wookiee planet for that final battle, which we've talked about before. But Adam, what is coming up on this week's show?
We've got news and some interesting things in there that we're going to chat about. And then the psychology of Darth Vader. This is the second part of our Anakin Skywalker talk. So, you know, we're going to take a look at where he was during the original trilogy. We saw where he was in part one after the original trilogy and what led to his fall. So today we're going to kind of talk about, you know, what keeps him where he is. Has he really been redeemed? Things like that. So we're going to have a nice little psychology chat today. Some of my favorite episodes are these psychology episodes.
Well, you know, I'm certainly a fan of psychology, given I have a bachelor's degree in it.
Yeah.
I love these talks. Yeah, I like it just a little bit. And so I'm definitely looking forward to it as well. But let's dive into our news segment for this week.
Well, you want the bad news or the really bad news?
So, Adam, I think I've said before that we don't hear a whole lot from Kathleen Kennedy all the time, but she did an interview with The Wrap discussing the technology of the Mandalorian Baby Yoda and the future of the franchise. Now, a lot of the stuff she says in this interview about Baby Yoda and the technology and everything, we're already pretty familiar with that stuff. I think we've gone over it quite a lot. But she speaks about the future of Star Wars and a little bit about the Kenobi series that is kind of telling and might either be, I don't know. We'll see what your thoughts are, Adam, on the future of Star Wars here. But about Obi-Wan, she says, we're now developing the limited Obi-Wan Kenobi series with Deborah Chow, and she's just been doing a phenomenal job. I think we all had anticipated this would be a limited series. It would be kind of a one-off, maybe like a 4 to 6 episode type of thing, and then be all of that, and that be it. Were you surprised at all by that, or pretty much expected?
Expected. I mean, it started out as a movie and then, you know, went to the series. So, you know, I was expecting a one season type deal. And I believe even after we heard that it was getting pushed back, that they were kind of redoing some script things, that it was going to be shortened then. So I was kind of expecting four to six episodes at that point.
Yeah, definitely. This wasn't a surprise for me, and I didn't expect it to go on like The Mandalorian seems to be.
Right.
So she goes on to talk about the future of the franchise, and she really talks about the importance of finishing the saga that George Lucas began with episodes 7, 8, and 9. And I think initially that was their goal, of course, using some of George's ideas, but also stepping away from a lot of his ideas as well and creating their own thing, you know, whether you agree or disagree with that approach. But we also got Solo and Rogue One in this kind of, I'll say, this first phase of Star Wars, if you want to compare it to Marvel at all. But now it seems that they're kind of at a loss for maybe still trying to figure out where this franchise needs to go, at least when it comes to films. So Kathleen says, we just need the time to step back and really absorb what George has created and then start to think about where things might go. That's what we've been doing, and we've been having a great deal of fun doing it and meeting with lots of different filmmakers and talent. There's so many fans out there and so many filmmakers that have been influenced by Star Wars, and it's a fantastic opportunity to get a sense of who wants to be a part of this. So that's what we've been doing. So what are your thoughts on Kathleen's comments about the future of Star Wars?
I think they have to have some idea where something is going. I mean, we heard not too long ago that Taika Waititi started writing his movie. So I think that there's some idea where that one's going to go. And that might even be the one coming up next, you know, since he's already starting working on it. So his might be the 2023 now, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think they have some idea where that will go. But then, you know, beyond that, they have a couple of years before they really have to start, you know, heavy production on 2025 movie, especially if Taika's is 2023, you know, that they've kind of started at the right time, I think, for that. So, yeah, I think they have to have some idea in the immediate future. And I think they already kind of know that. I think beyond that is where they're kind of grasping right now. And she had also mentioned that she was looking at the director that got picked up for the second Captain Marvel movie. I forget her name. I'm sorry. And she was looking at that. And I think they're just trying to find their next director and then go from there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. Is it at all, I don't know, concerning to you that they still don't know what to do completely with Star Wars films? Because to me, it is a little bit. It is, you know, I feel like there's so many places that they could go. And if it were me, and I know it's not me, but if it were, the first place I would go is I would go backwards in the timeline. I would go back to the Old Republic and probably where Benioff and Weiss were going to take it and look at the Jedi and Sith, in the Jedi Sith War, the beginning maybe of the Rule of Two, those types of things you could definitely incorporate, and you could make it still fresh but familiar. You could introduce a whole new kind of era of Star Wars that way, and it doesn't have to connect to any of the characters we already know. You know, it could be a new slate of characters, obviously, if you're going back that far. And that's probably where I'd go next. And then if they were ever to bring back and go forward in time after episode 9, if we ever got Daisy back as Rey and John back as Finn and everything, I'd like to see a different type of villain, maybe like a Thrawn type of villain come into the story. We're not having an empire again. You know, we're not having a First Order again. We're having maybe a different type of villain, a more strategic.
Yuuzhan Vong.
What's that?
News on Vong.
God bless you.
So Yuuzhan Vong is from the expanded universe, the New Jedi Order series. They were an invader from another galaxy universe that bordered up on the Star Wars galaxy. Mm-hmm. Kind of these like plant based creatures that were void of the Force, so they were very difficult to pin down for the Jedi to how to beat them. So,
right.
So yeah, that's one thing I'd always love to see brought into canon again, is just the Yuuzhan Vong.
And you mentioned something that's true too, that there's a lot of Legends material out there that they could draw from, and seeing a different type of villain would be, would be neat.
Yeah. I'm not so really that concerned with it because, like I think, like I said before, they've got some time, especially if Tychus is next and they already have him working on it. I think that'll cover them for 2023, you know, and then beyond that, they really have a good year or two before they really have to hire someone and settle down and decide what they're doing. So, I mean, they've got time, so I'm not that worried about it.
It's curious to me, though, that if the way you're talking about it, it seems like Taika's movie might be a one-off movie.
I think it is.
In the last experience they had with Solo, for example, didn't go too well for them with the box office and everything. Now, I know this could be a completely different situation with Taika being
Rogue
behind
One did
it.
Very well for them at the box office, though.
It did. So I'm just, I don't know.
Solo was tough because, I mean, Solo, you know, you're recasting, and I think Alden did wonderful. Donald Glover did wonderful also. But you're recasting that role, so a lot of people are going to have a negative reaction to that. It also came after Last Jedi, so we can't forget that it was, I think it suffered the most because it came after Last Jedi, to be honest with you. I think it just, it took so much of the brunt from that movie for no good reason, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I'm just curious as to, you know, I would have thought they'd be going into another series of films, you know, whether that's a trilogy or, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that might be where they go next is with another series of films, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
So next up, we have some TV news, and most of this news today is coming from Star Wars News Net. And we are not expected to see a delay in season 3 of The Mandalorian, which is good news. Jon Favreau spoke to The Hollywood Reporter and says that the fact that the set is much more contained is a benefit because you can limit the number of people. A lot of people controlling it are doing it remotely from what we call the Brain Bar, which is a bank of gaming computers, essentially. So you can kind of limit the amount of people that are working on it. And he mentioned they shoot some things outside, which helps as well. So Jon Favreau was not expecting The Mandalorian Season 3 to be delayed because of COVID-19. So I think that's really good news for fans of The Mandalorian. And it looks like they're continuing to push through with these seasons. And I'm wondering how many seasons of The Mandalorian we will inevitably get. I'm hoping we get like maybe 5 seasons, possibly.
I was going to say 4 to 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that'd be a good
number.
I
think 5 is best case scenario.
Right.
I think that's pretty common for shows like that. You know, 5, mm-hmm. 5 seasons, give or take, roughly.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way about Stranger Things, you know.
I think 5 for them is good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, 5 seasons is a nice sweet spot for a show like this.
How long did Breaking Bad get? Was it 6 seasons?
It was 6 seasons, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like, I guess 5, because they kind of split into 2 parts where there was like 8 episodes in season 5, and then another 8 episodes. Season 6,
yeah,
if you want to call it that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Dave Filoni mentioned his friendship with George Lucas and continuing that friendship and continuing to look to George for advice and getting more knowledge. And he mentioned that George has been complimentary. Dave Filoni thinks that he has enjoyed The Mandalorian and said now he gets to watch it as a fan and watch it as a viewer. I'm always curious about what George feels about these films, like how he truly feels about them, because it has to be hard to be the creator and to allow somebody else to kind of control your creation. So I'm always curious how he really feels about these things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I like you said, I think he likes The Mandalorian, you know, and I think for good reason. I think it was pretty obvious how he felt about at least The Force Awakens. He tried to be gracious, but I think he let some things slip. But yeah, it's always interesting to see what George thinks about this stuff.
Definitely. Continuing with The Mandalorian, We have an interview by IndieWire with Giancarlo Esposito, who talks in the beginning of the interview about just, you know, being a person of mixed race and playing in this role and the importance of that, being that he is half African-American and half Italian, and just his previous roles and how he had been kind of relegated to being a thief or a thug or that type of character and utilizing his Spanish accent. But then he goes on to say how important it was for Jon Favreau to have written a role specifically for him and everything. But he also releases some interesting tidbits about season two of The Mandalorian. And he says, you know, kind of, I don't know how it will unfold. I do know we get some more inklings of how he got the Darksaber. And then he goes on to say about what he might want to do with the child.
Okay.
And he says, I guarantee you'll get some clues in our next season about that. He says there may be some surprises because we have an empire that's fallen and we have wardens of those empires, of which Moff Gideon is one. And he says, does he, let's say, about the child, in essence, knowing what the child is made of to further humanity, or does he want it to take control of all humanity? We don't quite know that yet. So I've always been curious about what exactly they wanted to extract from the child, like that they mentioned in season one,
yeah,
and what they wanted to do with that. So my thoughts on it, and kind of my theory on it, is maybe they're trying to extract midichlorians from Baby Yoda, from the child. And maybe Moff Gideon is trying to gain Force ability, possibly, and now he has the dark saber and everything. So that was kind of my theory. I'm wondering if they're trying to extract the midichlorians and allow people that don't have the Force to have it.
And that's another Legends idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't know what you thought about that theory.
That was one of my theories last year.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that, or I was thinking something about, you know, Yoda's long life to give a certain person some longevity. But, you know, we saw that was, you know, his spirit enduring. I'm talking about Palpatine specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure that's out the window. But midichlorians is the other thing. That's, you know, that's pretty, I don't want to say obvious, because, you know, it's not like, of course it has to be midichlorians, but, you know, it makes a lot of sense. We'll say that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I'm guessing it seems like Giancarlo Esposito is suggesting that we might get some more hints in season two about what they wanted exactly from Baby Yoda and what they wanted to use it for. So we'll have to wait for those hints and details. In book news and book and comic news, we have Star Wars The Lightsaber Collection, that's a couple months away from release. But Insight Editions has given some glimpses into a few lightsabers that we'll see in this book. One is the Second Sister lightsaber that was in Jedi Fallen Order. We're also getting a look at Kylo Ren, well, Ben Solo's lightsaber,
right,
before it became what it was for Kylo Ren, you know, before he kind of took it and made it a dark side saber, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which looks pretty cool. And it looks similar to Leia's saber, which we're also getting a look at. Of course, you know, it says that this is quite possibly the most elegant lightsaber we've seen in Star Wars, which I agree with. I think Leia's lightsaber is very elegant, and we're getting a look at that. So this book is expected to arrive on October 20th, and you can pre-order it now. It's called Star Wars The Lightsaber Collection. And, you know, as I was reading this, Adam, I kept wondering, what lightsaber am I going to get at Galaxy's Edge? Because I'm not able to build my own, unfortunately, because they're not taking any reservations for that, or maybe they're all gone. So maybe I'll just buy a saber. So
yeah,
I don't know, out there in the chat, or Adam, if you have any input, what lightsaber should I buy for a nice price of $200 at Galaxy's Edge?
I'll tell you, Leia's lightsaber is beautiful. I love Leia's lightsaber. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'd be hard to pass up that one for me, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I'm always a fan of Luke's green lightsaber. I wouldn't mind getting my hands on that one.
I wouldn't mind having an Obi-Wan one either, but, but man, I loved Leia's lightsaber in episode 9. Just beautiful.
I don't know if they're selling it yet.
I don't know either.
I was talking about Rey's new lightsaber that she constructed.
Oh, yeah.
In Rise of Skywalker. Right. I think that'd be a cool one to have as well.
Yeah.
So, tough choice. Finally, we have some toy news and toys for Lego. And we have a new Luke Darth Vader Bespin dual set for the Empire Strikes Back 40th anniversary. And this looks pretty cool. I mean, we went and saw Empire last night, and I don't know if you've had a look at this yet or not, Adam, but the dual scene where Vader reveals the truth to Luke about being his father, and Luke is kind of out on that ledge there, and that's what the scene is for this new Lego set that's going to be coming out. So I think that looks pretty neat. If there was a Lego set I needed to have, it would be this one, I think, because it's just one of the most iconic moments in Star Wars.
Sure.
One of my favorite moments. And that's going to be, that set, the Bespin Duel, is going to be available August 27th on Target.com.
Cool. I want to say a couple things. First, I saw a meme on Twitter this week about a new Lego set coming out, and it was the Obi-Wan after the Darth Vader duel. set, and it was just a robe and a lightsaber. So nice. I got a kick out of that. And chat we had some lightsaber suggestions for you. Sidious, and then that was from Mr. Rez. And Force of Light said she wants the Rey, refurbished Skywalker, and Leia's. And then she said she wants them all. Megan Rickards said she likes Ahsoka's, as most people would likely go for Luke, Leia's, and Obi-Wan's, the bigger names. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I appreciate those suggestions. It's going to be a tough decision, and I'll have to think through this one.
Indeed.
Yeah. That actually wraps it up for the news today. And we can move on to our Meg's main segment.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
So welcome to the latest installment of the Psychology of series, where we take a look at what makes the characters in Star Wars tick. And when we last left Anakin Skywalker, he was up in flames on Mustafar without any organic limbs.
Toasty.
And he was toasty. He was crisp. Being transformed into Darth Vader. So on our last Psychology of episode, we talked about Anakin Skywalker in detail and his fall to the dark side. We talked a lot about fear, the fear of losing Padme, and that fear leading to anger, the anger leading to hate, the hate leading to suffering, as Yoda tells us. And then Anakin succumbing to the dark side with the thought of being able to save Padme, to save what he fears losing. So if his fear of losing Padme, Adam, drove him to the dark side, what is it that kept him on the dark side?
I think this is a multi-layer answer, but I think I would go with hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you said, he's lost Padme. So that's gone. And he can't get it back. So I think at that point he's a little bit broken. And then I also have to kind of remember, he's the tear in Revenge of the Sith is very telling in a lot of ways. And I'm going to get into that again later, but I think that also kind of symbolizes that he knows that he feels that in some way he's hopeless too. He's lost and he can't go back. Kind of something that was explored more in the sequel trilogy with Ben. But I feel that he feels that also.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think there's definitely some hopelessness there. I think it, for me, it kind of comes down to the fact that he's already committed all these atrocities to join the dark side. You know, he's killed younglings. He's done all these horrible things. And I think sometimes when you go down that path, I think Yoda says the same thing. Like, once you start down the dark path, forever will it dominate your destiny. Because it's like, it's hard to get out of that once you're down so far on that road. You feel like when you've committed all those acts that you can't turn back, that there's no coming back for you, you know, that it's just too difficult to get back to the light side, because you're so far gone. Right. So I think that's a part of it. And I think also just, Palpatine and the Emperor having this hold over Darth Vader, even though
that was the other layer that I was thinking of too.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you said that.
And even though, you know, we start to see in The Empire Strikes Back when he discovers the truth about his son, starting to kind of think about overthrowing the Emperor, and we're going to get into that when we talk about belief systems about with the Sith and everything like that. I think it's a combination of feeling like you're just too far gone and you can't get out of that situation, and just the Emperor having that control over him and everything. So what about, what is Vader's belief system during the original trilogy?
How about you answer that for me first? Give me some context.
Sure. I think, you know, everybody operates off of their own kind of belief system that, in many ways just determines what your actions will be. You know, if you're of a Christian belief system, then your actions are going to be determined based on those set of beliefs, and what you're going to do, what you're going to say, kind of follows suit with your belief system. Or if you just have, you know, let's say just like a moral compass, maybe you're not a religious person, but you just have a certain moral compass that directs your decisions and everything. And I think for Vader in the original trilogy, it's largely kind of just this, his belief in the Force, his belief in the Sith and the power of the Force. I mean, even in A New Hope, the Imperial officers putting all their kind of belief and hope into the Death Star, into this weapon. But, you know, Vader says, don't be something along the lines of, you know, this technological terror you have constructed, you know, don't believe too much in that. The Force, the ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force. So I think Vader relies very, very heavily on the Force in his belief system, and the dark side, the rule of two, inevitably, where, you know, usually the Padawan ends up eventually destroying the Master and then becoming the Master himself. And that's where we see Vader's motivation, I think, once he discovers that his son is Luke Skywalker. He wants Luke at that point to join him, you know, and to overthrow the Emperor and rule the galaxy together as father and son. So I think he's very, very driven by that.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple times, and I'm going to go with the word power. Mm-hmm. I think that Vader's belief there is that power wins out, the ultimate strength. I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why he falls to the dark side is to gain more power, to gain the power to stop people from dying. And I think mm-hmm. that's kind of what keeps him going, is, you know, the feeling that power will win out at the end of the day, and that, you know, him joining with Luke will gain them more power to take over the universe on their own, giving them, you know, giving Vader basically the power that he doesn't have right now with Sidious. So I'm going to go with, power keeps him going at this point, the want for power.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And what you said kind of triggered something in my mind about the fact that the Emperor in this relationship, the Emperor holds the power and the control at this point. And so Vader wants that power and control on his side, in his corner, you know what I mean?
Right.
So having Luke turn could give him the power to gain more power.
Yeah.
You know. So we know that Darth Vader is one of the most iconic villains in film history. And what do you think it is that makes this character so iconic and kind of terrifying in a way?
For me, it's the all black and not, you know, everything black. It's not like Johnny Cash black. It's like, you don't, the mask in that too, you can't see his eyes. It's just total darkness, you know, and just judging by, I think, how hard that would be to film that type of thing, you know, with there being very little contrast in that suit, you know, it's not really something that was done before and doesn't really get done a whole lot since, but it just, the way that that suit works together, with, you know, the mechanical breathing too, it's just very inhuman in a way, you know, it's unsettling. It's unsettling to not see his eyes, to see that part of him. Cause we read a lot through people's eyes, you know, through the expressions that you can see through, you know, through the face, through the eyes, not being able to see that is very unsettling. So.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% there. You know, I think about just the suit itself and him being, you can't, like you said, you can't see his face. You can't see his eye. You don't know what's underneath there. You know, what kind of monster is living underneath this suit? That is just kind of, and anytime Vader, you know, in A New Hope, and when they board the Tantive V4, in the beginning, and just him marching down that hallway with like determination.
Yeah,
and I think on the base in Hoth, when he goes down onto the planet and he's walking through, just him walking through a place, like coming to get you. Like that was pretty scary for me as a kid. Like, oh my goodness, I don't want him to get to my characters, to my heroes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, what do you do to stop him? You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so like you mentioned that scene in Rogue One, when you're just coming down the hallway, and what do you you just don't stop that, you know, that's right. Terrifying.
Right. So I think he's just he is a very terrifying villain and still one of the most iconic villains of all time, for sure.
Carl in chat is saying something about power. He said, you know, Vader had been manipulated by everyone, Tarkin, Palpatine, and then his frustration to be the one was his downfall. He said he wanted the power, and he had power, but he always wanted, there was always someone above him, and in the end, that defeated him.
Yeah, that's a great point, Carl, and actually, it's a great segue into what was going to be my next point in question. I think Empire Strikes Back gives us the best kind of Vader moments, you know what I mean? It some of the best, at least. And I think it's because he's no longer answering to Tarkin. Tarkin's no longer holding his leash, as Leia said.
Yeah.
This is kind of like Vader unleashed in a way on his own. He, you know, he chats with the Emperor and everything every once and again, but you know, he's doing his thing. And so what moments stand out to you the most when it comes to Darth Vader?
Well, we already mentioned the Rogue One hallway scene, so I'm not going to pick that one. Mm-hmm. You've talked about a little bit of Empire Strikes Back, and there's a few in there that I love. Apology accepted, you know, those types of things. The little one-liners, you know, the Schwarzenegger-style one-liners. I think I'm going to go with a different one. I remember in Rebels, my favorite moment of Rebels actually is the first season when you first see Vader, and he's maybe it wasn't the first time, but it's one of the first times you see Vader. He's coming out of this hangar of sorts, and it's all dark, and you see just the lightsaber light up,
yeah,
and you know that's what that is, and. Mm-hmm. That gave me chills. You know, there's not many times isn't that I just get chills like that, but that moment gave me chills. And so that turned into one of my favorite Rebels moments. And I'll pick that one for one of my favorite Vader moments.
Okay. I like it. for me, I think one of the most shocking moments of the original trilogy for me, seeing it as a kid, you know, seeing it as a 10 to 12 year old, I forget what age I was exactly when I saw it, was, you know, Vader has all these encounters with our heroes, you know, in A New Hope, he tries to shoot Luke down as he's doing the trench run, but he doesn't really completely come into contact with him. And in Empire Strikes Back in the beginning on Hoth, he gets close to the characters. He gets close to Han and Leia and 3PO and Chewie, but he doesn't quite get to them. So when Han, Leia, and Chewie and 3PO are on or in Cloud City, they're on Bespin, and you know, Lando's saying he's talking about how he's just made a deal that's going to keep the Emperor away forever. And that door opens and Vader is there. That was shocking to me. That was one of the most shocking moments. And I was just like, I was so afraid because there's this villain that I'm terrified of. And he is this close to ending my favorite characters. You know what I mean? He's just right there in that room. I was just blown away by that and really kind of shocked. So for me, that's a moment that really stands out to me that, and I didn't know what the fate of Han and Leia or any of those characters would have been at that point.
Right.
So for some reason that stands out to me.
That's a good pick.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've talked about how iconic of a villain Darth Vader is, but I think he's also unique in the fact that he's ultimately redeemed in the end of the original trilogy. I don't think we have a whole lot of villains that are redeemed, really. I mean,
right.
There might be a few out there here and there, but there's not too many. And so what do you think brought about the redemption of one of the most like evil and feared and iconic villains in film history?
Well, I would say that there was still good in him, and there was still that part of him that never died out, of Anakin that never died out. And you know, Luke, I think, was the catalyst to awaken that part of him. Mm-hmm. But I think that Anakin was still strong enough to hold that one little piece of him out, that didn't fully fall.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that Luke had a great deal to do with it for sure. And you know, he even Luke mentions, you know, I feel the good in you. I feel the conflict. I think in large part, you know, yes, Anakin still has good in him, just like Padme said in Revenge of the Sith. I think the turning point is when Vader discovers that Luke is his son. And then, of course, he later discovers that Leia is his daughter. But Luke being his son, him having, you know, you're still a parent. You know, you still have that tendency to protect your children. And you know, even though he's this evil dude who's done these terrible things, this is still his son. He is a parent. So, you know, when you get that moment in the throne scene where the Emperor is just, you know, almost killing Luke and everything, at that point, Vader's like, no, I can't let this happen. I have to protect my son. I have to save my son. And he throws the Emperor, you know, over the ledge and everything. But then he tells Luke, you know, tell your sister that you were right. You know, you were right about me. Still having that good in me and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and his name is Darth Vader, which is, you know, means like dark father. So the father element of that, I think, is what really is the catalyst that brings about his redemption.
Okay. So you think that process kind of maybe starts a little bit in episode 4? Because he does also kind of plead for Luke's life in episode 5.
Yeah. Yeah, it probably does. I think, you know, he realizes that Luke is out there. He's alive. He's his son. You know, I think it begins at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, in your mind, has Vader truly been redeemed by his actions? and why or why not?
I have a lot to say about this, and interestingly, it's not a lot of it is about Vader. So first of all, redemption in my mind. I want to define that real quick. So for me, you know, redemption is one thing. It doesn't redeem any of his actions. It's an internal thing. You know, in one way you could say it is that it's, you know, kind of healing his soul almost, if you want to take it to a spiritual level like that. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't redeem anything that he's done up to that point. You know, he still has those crimes, and you know, in some ways he doesn't get to answer for that. So, you know, there's still that form of injustice there, you know. But as far as he himself being redeemed, yes, I think he is fully redeemed at the end of six. And we talked about that quote last week. I think it was Kazanjian that came to Lucas and, you know, asked about Anakin being there at the end, you know, saying that he's, you know, as good as Obi-Wan or Yoda at that point. Mm-hmm. And Lucas, you know, we talked about this last week, so I don't have to do the whole thing. But, you know, Lucas said, you know, right, that's part of your religion, isn't it? That, you know, mm-hmm, that can happen.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think that is him fully being redeemed. Mm-hmm. And now,
yeah,
I have some other things to say about that.
Sure.
And I'm going to be kind of blunt about this. Mm-hmm. If you are a fan of these movies and you participate in cancel culture, I think you missed the point of these movies. I think the point of these movies all along has been redemption. Mm-hmm. That people can do bad things and still come back around and still become good people again. You know, that's what episodes 1-6 were about. That's what the sequel trilogy was about in the end. Mm-hmm. That's what these movies at their heart are about. You know, there's other themes, there's other things we can talk about, but I think in the end, the main idea of all of this stuff is redemption, you know? And the story that we are told is, you know, that Vader redeems himself. And I think that you have to take that at face value. And I think that can be a pretty powerful lesson, especially in today's world, you know, when we deal with things like people doing bad things. And how do we deal with that? Are they bad forever? Or do, you know, or do we allow some type of redemption to occur? And I think that if I'm taking the message of these movies to heart, that we have to allow some type of redemption to occur, that we have to believe that there's still good in people, you know, mm-hmm, like Padme believed and like Luke believed. We have to believe that there's still that possibility for redemption, you know, that we aren't always what we start out to be.
Yeah, man, that was very powerful and profound, and I completely agree with you and how it relates to what goes on in our culture today and how it ties into religion. And, you know, I'm not shy about saying that I am a Christian believer, and, you know, I believe that anybody can be forgiven for any sin that they've committed if they just ask for that forgiveness and change their ways. And, you know, I agree that Vader has been redeemed. I mean, we kind of see like the Force's version of heaven, maybe coming back as a Force ghost. You know, we see Anakin appearing with Obi-Wan and with Yoda at the end of the film as a Force ghost. So it's kind of he's reached that point. You know, he's been redeemed. And I think when it comes to today's culture, I think it's really important that we look in the mirror and we think, am I free of sin? Am I free of, have I never made a mistake? You know, have I never screwed up? I don't think any of us can look in the mirror and honestly say, I'm without flaw. I am without mistakes. And so I think when other people make mistakes, we have to kind of pump the brakes and just kind of think about the fact that none of us are without. We're not perfect. And yeah. I think it's always important to give people a chance at redemption. So I am with you 100%.
Yeah. I mean, I've done some jacked up stuff in my life, and I hope that I'm not always that person. I don't think that I am. I hope that I've moved past that. You know, maybe I've not blown up a planet or, you know, killed anybody, but right. I've still done some messed up stuff. And, you know, at the end of the day, I hope that I'm worthy of redemption. And This is a weird sidebar here, but I love to watch like true crime stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a guilty pleasure, I guess. But there's some stories, like if you watch enough of that, there's some stories where, you know, people get to meet whoever committed horrible crimes against their family. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get those stories where those people are, you know, able to give that person another chance, and then that person can blossom into something good, very good. That possibility, I think, has to exist somewhere out there, is that, you know, we can get past what we've done before, mm-hmm. grow into something better.
Absolutely.
And then, like I said, that doesn't resolve him of any crimes that he committed, you know?
No, that's not what
that means. That doesn't mean that he gets a pass for doing what he did, for committing all of those atrocities. Mm-hmm. In the real world, that doesn't mean that we, you know, forget about what people did. But you mentioned forgiveness. There has to be that path to forgiveness somewhere, I think. But like I said, if there's a crime to be paid for, then it still has to be paid for. You know, society kind of sets those costs, and it doesn't, just because a person says, "Hey, I'm redeemed. I'm sorry. Can I be redeemed now?" It doesn't mean that you say, "Okay, yeah, you're good."
Right.
You know. So.
Yeah. Yeah. There has to be, you know, some work involved in getting back to that point where you can, you know, be forgiven and earn that redemption and everything, for sure. So, Adam, before we end this segment today, do you have any final thoughts on the psychology of Anakin Skywalker or Darth Vader?
No, I'm glad. The only thing, I'm glad we did this in two parts, because there's so much to pick apart with this one character, yeah, of Anakin Skywalker. And I'm glad that we kind of did this in two steps, with, you know, leading up to the fall, and then, you know, what it takes to remain fallen and then to possibly be redeemed. So, yeah, I'm glad we did this in two little sections here.
Same here. It has been a lot of fun dissecting the psychology of Anakin and Darth Vader, and, you know, one of the most iconic characters and villains, and of course in film history. This character just continues to be talked about a lot, and, you know, just featured in popular culture. And I think there's also this desire to even get more about Darth Vader and, more stories about Darth Vader. I think that desire's out there, and that's just because of what a great character he is. So I had a lot of fun talking the psychology of Anakin and Darth Vader with you, and I think we are ready to wrap up the show for this week.
I'm just glad you're here. At the end.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I think I wrote down everyone's name as we went along here. But I saw Megan Rickards in chat, Carl, Michael from 2Med2, Kat, or Vader's Girl, Mr. Rez, Force of Light Entertainment, and Radio Rebellion, which would be Alberto. Thank you, everyone, for showing up. I don't think I missed anyone, but if I did, I'm very sorry, and I'm very glad that you were here. remember, we are taking a couple weeks off after this. This is our last live show before a little break. The podcast remains on time. It's still coming out on Sundays. But next week is actually Force Fest weekend, so I'll be helping out with that. We're going to take a little break from the live show for next week, and then Josh is luckily down in Florida. He's going to be visiting Galaxy's Edge, so he'll be gone the 5th and the 12th. So those two Saturdays after that, won't have a live show either. But we will be back on the 19th, if my math is right, for another live show. However, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app in the meantime so you get the podcast. If you're on a podcast app like iTunes, or if you maybe use Podchaser, you can leave us a review there. Reviews help us, you know what we're doing good, know what we need to do better, and they help help us get out to more people. More people find out what we're up to here. Check out the website from a certain point of view.com. You'll find some blog articles. You can send us questions, show topics. You can find links to everywhere you can subscribe to the show. I'm going to have a review of the Clone Wars book, Stories of Light and Dark. That will be coming out in the next day or two. So check, be on the lookout for that. Check out the review when it comes out. Our socials are Twitter at @CertainPOVPod. Facebook is From a Certain Point of View. Discord server link is in the show notes and also on the website. And if you're on Discord, check that out. There's been a lot of fun memes in there lately. So we have a lot of fun in there. Our email is CertainPOVPod@gmail.com. And we are hosted by Anchor.fm. You can send us a 60-second voicemail through Anchor.fm and ask us any questions, get your opinions on the show, anything we missed about the psychology of Anakin Skywalker, anything we've talked about in the last 42 weeks before that. You can send any voicemail you want. We'll be happy to play it on the show. Remember to check out the Red 5 Network at red5network.com. There's a number of wonderful shows on the Red 5 Network. It's a great group of podcasts that love to talk about everything, not just Star Wars there. Force of Light Entertainment's in our chat. They talk about everything. They were kind of co-streaming the Wonder Woman 84 trailer reveal not too long ago. So make sure you check out Red 5 Network. Lots of stuff there. You can find me on Twitter at TheGauze85. That's where I do all my stuff that is not always Star Wars. And Josh, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JediJarJar1722. I just want to thank everybody for joining us today in the live chat or listening later. Also, we're planning on putting out some new content, new types of content on YouTube in the near future, looking at doing, kind of maybe trailer reactions when the Mandalorian trailer hits, trailer breakdown. Also, Adam mentioned I'm going to Galaxy's Edge, where I'll be recording some of my reactions and experiences there that I'll also be putting on YouTube. So just be on the lookout for that. Of course, as always, be on the lookout for our weekly poll. And if you have a question that you'd like us to answer, we would love to hear from you. You can go ahead and ask that question on Twitter, or leave a message for us, as Adam mentioned before. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, we always love to hear from our audience. And it's because of you that we keep this going. And just remember that everything we said today was true.
From a certain point of view.